B-Pod Studios.
It's the Anthony Gargano Show on 97.5 The Fanatic.
Let's get further analysis, and my man took him to task last night on SportsCenter, SVP. That's right, the NBA analyst on ESPN. Man, he's terrific. The great Legs. Hello, Legs.
Oh, man. Hello, Anthony. How are you, man?
I'm so bummed out. You and I were texting last night. I'm so bummed out, brother.
I'm sure, man. Everybody is. I had a friend of mine text me last night, and I thought it was pretty interesting. He said he didn't think it was possible to be more depressed after the end of the season than he was last year with what went down, and yet he found himself even feeling worse this year. And I think a lot of people probably feel that way in Philly.
I mean, you know what's amazing? I never thought I would see a performance like Ben Simmons' performance in the fourth quarter, Game 7, until I watched freaking James Harden last night.
Well, I mean, that's the thing that my head is just spinning about, right? So, look, this whole situation arose because of what happened in that Atlanta series, and everything came to a head in that last game, and you saw what happened over the summer into the season, and they waited basically two-thirds of the season to target a specific player to come in and help Joel Embiid navigate those exact situations that Ben Simmons wanted no part of. And you end up in the exact same boat with somebody that just completely deviated from what he is in terms of mindset at his best. You can't possibly deviate further. And I'm not even talking about playing poorly or playing well. That's a totally different conversation. I know the difference between guys playing poorly, playing well, and then guys that just sort of disengage and deviate from the way that they play. That's the thing you can't overcome, because you're counting on players playing to their strengths, and whether the ball goes in or not, or they have a good night, that's another conversation. Happens to everybody. I certainly had my share of bad nights as a player. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about when you stop processing the floor and processing aggressiveness and situations that require you to be aggressive, when you stop processing those altogether and you deviate that far from the way that you typically play, it is impossible to overcome. The only chance you have, honestly, in that situation is to get that guy off the floor. And look, Doc did it. I mean, Kevin McHale did it to James Harden in Houston in a very famous episode of a situation. It was one of Doc Rivers' 3-1 series losses, Clippers Houston, and they sat him in the fourth quarter of that game. I mean, it's one of the gutsiest moves you'll ever see a coach make, and they make that comeback with Josh Smith and
Carl Brewer, my God. Right?
And so I'm saying, you know, that, because if the guy's on the floor and he's that far removed from what he's supposed to be doing and what he has done throughout his career and what he does when he's at his best, you're really playing with four guys. So you're almost better off getting him off the floor, giving the ball to Maxey, and then putting some guys out there like Shake, and guys that at least shoot the ball. And maybe you have a chance that way. But if you got a guy out there that's your primary ball handler and he decides he's going to go to that place, and we've seen it before, you have no chance to overcome that. You can, especially when Embiid, you know, not playing great and limited physically and going through so much. I have so much respect for what this guy went through and trying to come back. But that's what it comes down to, Anthony. And you saw it again. You saw it last year with Simmons. We kind of knew that was Simmons, though. This, and we knew this was James Harden, too, but it's like he tantalizes you because of the physical talent that's there. And he had that game the other night, and you're going, okay. And then he decides that he's going to just basically disengage as an aggressive offensive player. I don't know how you're supposed to overcome that.
No, I hear you, because I don't know either. And the other thing that was so befuddling is, what was the plan last night? Before we even get to Harden, because I can't even fathom him, is what was the plan? Like, what were they trying to accomplish? You've coached you know, at multiple levels, the whole thing, you know the game inside and out. You always have a plan of attack of your opponent. What were they trying to accomplish offensively?
Say what were they trying to accomplish? I think in large part what you're doing is you're turning the offense over to, you know, two elite level players. And that's what you're doing. And that's kind of the way the NBA works in a lot of ways. You know, you're counting on them to do what the NBA looks like, which is, you know, a lot of high ball screen, a lot of, you know, for James Harden.
Right, so they packed themselves in with zone, right? So, yeah. You know, how come Embiid wasn't used to at least try to space a little bit and go down, like, go run a base, run off a baseline pick off the weak side and establish position down low? You know what? That would force the ball to move and force spaces.
Well, we said the same things about Brett Brown with Embiid, which to me, and I remember, you know, saying this repeatedly about Brett Brown, it was more a situation where I felt like he was sort of just watching what Joel felt like doing on that given night. And what do you feel like doing? Was it mandated? I mean, I use that word many times with Brett Brown. It's probably a similar situation here. Was enough mandated for how they were going to attack it by getting the ball to Joel Embiid in his spots? Was it a situation where, because of what he was dealing with the face and the thumb, he was more comfortable playing a little bit more as a face-up spot against that zone? And look, the zone didn't win the game for them. They lost the game because, look, they hung in there. They had a lead. They started, had a slow start. Then they got a little bit of rhythm. They got the lead in the second quarter. They lost the game because, and I felt the same way about situations in Houston. I saw it happen. It becomes completely demoralizing to the rest of the team when you know that you can see it in their eyes. You can see it by the way they're playing. You can see that you don't have a shot because this guy's going to have the ball. You're counting on him, and there's just no possible way he's in a place mentally right now to be able to do what we're going to need him to do against this team, a tough-minded, good defensive team.
Yeah.
And when that happens, it just starts to snowball the other way. The carelessness with the ball.
Horrible. Him and Tyrese yelled at him one time. And then,
well, what was, I mean, that play that Tyrese yelled at him when I'm going, what? So for Tyrese to react that way, I would like to know, what exactly was it that Tyrese Maxey thought James Harden was supposed to be doing on that play? Because Harden is trotting up the right slot in the backcourt. His head is not even looking at the ball. Maxey's got the ball not being pressured. He's got 20 feet of space, and he's throwing the ball ahead to Harden and then yells at Harden. And I'm going, well, wait a second. Why would you throw the ball there? Okay, so even if you're running something that's been called that Harden's going to initiate, you don't have to give it to him right there, especially if he's not looking at you. So he throws it carelessly. They steal it, go in, lay it in. Tyrese and Harden have some words, or Tyrese has words to Harden. And the very next trip, they come down the floor and they cough it up again and give up a breakaway. I mean, it's like they were so, and again, to me, I'm telling you, Anthony, the whole table is set by the look in James Harden's eyes and his body language. And you're his teammate. And you're going, well, okay, we're cooked. What are we supposed to do? I'll never forget that night in Houston against
D'Antoni.
Yeah. A blank stare on D'Antoni's face at halftime. Like, wait a minute. You led the league in scoring. You have not taken a shot in the first quarter of the game. What are we supposed to do? You know, I had a kid. I was saying something to somebody today. Like, I coached the AAU all these years, and I had one kid that was clearly my best offensive player. He started at Seton Hall for 3 years. And he led the Under Armour circuit in scoring as a U16 player. Like, this kid was a phenomenal elite open court scorer. And I'm saying, well, what would we have done if he just decided to show up one day and didn't want to shoot tonight? How are we supposed to overcome that? Like, and that's kind of what Sixers found themselves in last night. And you just felt that, like, how demoralized they became. Just, it was obvious. And it was all related to me and connected to me to the way that Harden was playing.
It's the Anthony Gargano Show on 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
The Fanatic.
And here's the beauty. You're freaking stuck with him.
Oh, yeah. There's nothing you can do about it. There's nothing you can do. I had this conversation with the guys last night, you know, on SCP. We were talking about, you know, going out, just a little, you know, talking hoops before the show. And it's like, well, somebody would do it. Like, somebody would pull the trigger and trade for him. And I'm going, really? Like, what scenario can you envision? Like, you're talking about a team that thinks they need to sell tickets. You want to send them to a bad team, like a team that's got nobody coming to the game. What kind? How do you think you would be in that setting? Okay, playing for nothing. So is he the kind of guy that can go to a team that's close and put them over the top? When you've seen this pattern before in the postseason, and you saw it again last night, they have.
It was amazing.
Next year,
why? All right, let me ask you a question. Listen, you know, we all follow the league. All right. But there is, you know, when you live with a guy, it's different, right? Like, you know the guy's everything about him. You know his warts, as great as he is, or whatever. Why did he lust after him?
I don't know. That's a great question. I mean, there's something more to it. It has to be, like, just on a personal level, the way that, you know, their relationship is, that those guys just are up just very tight. He's just incredibly fond of him as a person and a player, and he's willing to overlook or forget about some of the things that he witnessed because this stuff's been there. Anthony, if you recall, going back, you and I were both excited that they...
Yes, I'm doing a dance.
Trade went, right. But also, I do recall saying throughout this whole time, since he got there, all the times we've talked, that, you know, there is still something out there with him that's going to have to be overcome and proven because those things are real.
Yeah,
I kept saying it, and what I kept hoping.
I remember.
I don't know why. I'll tell you this right now, flat out, definitively, mark my words, you are never going to get me to buy in again that it's going to be a different result. I'm sorry. There's no more benefit of the doubt. In fact, it's the
opposite. No, I hear you. I get you.
I'm expecting this now. This is what we expect at the end of the journey, and that's what's going to be comical next year. He'll do things in a regular season that are going to look like James Harden the other night. Game 4 is going to look like that. Right? Or game 5 is going to look like that.
Yeah.
And you're going to say, or game 4, whatever it was, game at home when he went off. He's going to look like that some nights, and people are going to get excited again. And Embiid's going to be healthy, and he's going to look great. He's going to play at an MVP caliber level again. Maxey's going to continue to grow as a player. He's all-star, on the verge of an all-star right now. Like, you're going to be excited, and you're going to think it's going to be different, and it's going to be the same exact thing in pressure situations. It's going to be the same thing. Then the decision comes, because there is no decision now. This is James Harden's decision. There's nothing you can do about it. He's going to opt in. It's $47 million. He's going to take the money. Don't blame him. Get it all. But then the conversation is going to shift during the season. What do you do next summer?
God.
You going to give him that money?
I got to go next summer? What the hell, no. You don't even want to give it to him now. If he somehow didn't opt in and you were forced to either pay him, you wouldn't pay him.
Yeah, you did say something to me last night that I want to talk to you real quick. You said, we were texting, and you said, you know, they need a point guard. And I'm saying, well, what is that anymore in the league? Like, I don't know what you mean by that. You need an elite-level playmaker? Because the guys that are elite-level playmakers that are also scorers are the best players in the league. Like, you're talking about the best players in the NBA. Because the rest of those guys that are good playmakers – and score 20 a night?
No, yeah. I meant a backup point guard. I meant.
Oh, okay.
No.
That's fine.
I was looking like, no, we were talking about you need a wing. You need a backup point guard.
You need a wing that can get his own shot.
Need a backup. And we were talking about if no Harden, because Maxey's not really a point guard, right? And if you got Embiid, You got to have somebody that can control the offense. You have Embiid, and you got Maxey's not that guy, right? You need somebody else that can control the offense if Harden's not here. I mean, that killed them having no backup point guard this year.
Let's say we suck it up. You suck it up for a year. Next year, it's going to be the same thing. Run it back. You tweak some of the role players, but it's going to be the same three guys at the top. It is. So let's just say you get to that.
Tobias is back?
Yeah. And let's just say they decide at the end of the year that they're going to make that decision that's rare in sports these days, that they're not going to offer them. They're not going to give them that money, right? Let's just say that happens. And you go now the following season with Maxey, who at that point will be ready to be an all-star, I believe. And you still have Embiid. And so now you go and you go, well, what else? What do you need?
You need a wing.
Yeah, you need a wing that can get his own shot.
You and I were talking about Miles Bridges.
Well, every free agent class is different. He's restricted free agent this summer.
Yeah.
So you're not going to get him.
Yeah.
Because they can't throw the money at him.
Right.
Either.
No. I'm with you. But we were talking about a player like him. Like, you need a player like
definitely.
Him.
You need a wing that can get his own shot. And look, if you get a guy that also, by the way, happens to be a really competitive defender like him, man, you know, hit the jackpot. But, like, look around the league. Today, I was just looking, but unfortunately, some of the guys that are available, like, this summer won't be next year. You know who would be a great, like, backup point guard for them? Tyus Jones.
Yeah.
But he's up this year.
Yeah.
So somebody's going to pay him this year. So every summer's different. And I haven't looked ahead to 2023 to see who's going to be available that summer. I don't know. But I look at it like this. If you give the ball to Maxey making his team after next season, man, okay, go find some of these pieces we're talking about. But, you know, you don't need to go get another, like, elite level, like, point guard guy that can score and keep Maxey, like, off the ball. You're not going to get a guy.
No,
the best players in the league. Those are the guys that are like every team makes a franchise player.
Yeah. No, I'm with you on that. I'm saying it. You don't want, you still need somebody that can direct. He's not the star, but he's going to direct. Like, you need
Let me give you an example of a name, a type of player. And I'm not saying this guy specifically, and he got hurt this year. It really hurt their team. What about a Ricky Rubio type player? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, exactly. You need somebody. And he turned out to be a decent little player. Like, he honed his game a little bit. But you need something along the lines of that, like Conley, like guys that are not, that can just direct the offense. You got Embiid, and you're going to have Maxey, and then you're going to have a wing guy. You need somebody that's going to play a point guard for you if there's no Harden.
You know, I think Maxey can evolve as that. And I look at him, and I look at a guy like
maybe
Garland.
Yeah.
Darius Garland made the All-Star team this year. Darius Garland and Tyrese Maxey are very similar.
Yeah.
Now, Garland's a better deliverer of the ball off ball screen and off getting downhill and then making a play out of that, whether it's a lob, pocket pass, or kick out. He's better. You know, he's better. He's been a point guard his whole life.
Yeah, he's a born point guard. Maxey's not born, but Maxey could be. I don't disagree with that.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So I think the key is Maxey becoming your point guard and evolve with his playmaking to go with Embiid, add a bigger wing that can get his own shot. And again, you might not be, you know, Brandon Ingram, might not be an all-star 25-point guy, but somebody that can get his own shot, that 6'7", 6'8", 6'9", range on the wing. You need more reliable shooting from your role players.
My God, they have no bench. You need a bench.
And a backup point guard that can I don't know. I guess somebody texted me. I didn't see it, but texted me and said Stephen A's reporting he's coming back. Has it been reported in Philly? Like, they already made.
People tell me there's no way. They're not going to eat that contract. So if they're not going to eat the contract, he's coming back. Unless, you know, he's working out some deal with the Lakers, which I don't
know. The only thing I'll say about that is this.
What sucks is I got to go. The show's over. And it blows because I want more of you, but I love you.
All right.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.